On this episode of the Real Life Caddy podcast, Zabo and I are joined by local Northern Californian golfing legend, Eddie Olson. Eddie does some caddying with us. However, this story is all about his road to becoming a professional golfer. Eddie made the most of his early talent, and he tells us about how he got into golf and his progression in the game as an amateur. Eddie discusses his amateur successes, his recruitment to college golf in Las Vegas, and then the daunting step into professional golf. He then tells us all about the struggles of being a professional golfer. We cover topics like getting sponsorship, his highs in the pro game, and of course his low points. We then find out what the future holds. Zabo and I really enjoyed Eddie's interview, and I think it's a fascinating story that is so much more relatable for listeners than hearing about the top players in the world who make the grade. If you have any feedback or questions, please email us, podcast@glorifieddonkey.com, or contact us on social media. If you're new to the podcast, we would encourage you to check out earlier episodes. However, in the meantime, thanks for listening, and we really hope that you enjoyed this episode. Welcome to episode 116 of the Real Life Caddy podcast. This one is called Coulda, Shoulda, Woulda. The podcast is sponsored by whom?
Big Game Golf.
That's wee Zabo.
Good to be here.
Fresh from a loop?
Fresh from a loop. Just did one actually early this morning. I've been off the grass for like 5.5-6 hours. Been nice.
Lovely. I'm just straight off the course.
You are.
Very interesting one. The notes were taken, and there will be something talked about in a future episode. We're joined by a local legend.
He is a legend.
Professional golfer, Eddie Olson. Eddie, steady Eddie, welcome to the podcast.
Good to be here, boys. Thank you.
I worked with Eddie about maybe 3 weeks ago, and something I've always wanted to do on this podcast was talk about, you know, it's about entertain, educate, relate. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you have a mega superstar on a podcast, on a TV show, it's hard to relate to them.
It is, yeah.
However, most people in life doesn't come that easy. You know, we have struggles here, left, right, center. We have good highs, lows, etc. And I always thought people, listeners of this, would relate more to someone who's a pro and has had a real interesting journey to get there.
Yeah,
and
that's why a true journeyman, you know, somebody who hasn't really broken through yet, but is on the precipice and has the ability to do it.
And Eddie's filling that hole.
He is. He is. Have you known Eddie for a long time?
Little time.
Yeah. Oh, really?
So hardly
so. That time you worked with him, like the first time you met him?
Yeah. I met you at the AT&T.
Briefly, you're there, yes.
And then about a month ago, then we worked together.
Gotcha.
And that's when and then he started talking about some numbers he'd been thrown out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, sorry, you shot what?
Yeah. I've played with Eddie a couple of times. He probably remembers one time or two, but a couple of times in Twilight League.
I doubt it.
Yeah, he probably doesn't remember. There was that one time, actually.
How could I forget that beard?
Good point. This one time we were playing in Twilight League over here, and we were playing with Eric Justison. Do you still talk to Eric?
You know, I haven't spoken with Eric in a while. He kind of went off and did his own thing, but he was at time. Yeah. You know, he was a local legend himself.
He was legit. He qualified for the 2010 U.S. Open, made the cut, and then it was Eddie, Eric Justison, Casey Boynes, and myself, and we played, and there was like 26 birdies made in that foursome. I think I had two, but
yeah. Zabo once told a guy we caddy for that his short game was up there with the best in the game. Did you walk away from that Twilight feeling that there's something you can learn from your short game?
Yes, I did. It was the hands forward approach, Zabo.
Oh,
yeah,
get those
hands ahead of that ball.
I still got that. Beautiful. Still got that.
So, Eddie, start telling us about yourself. Where are you from?
Thanks, Big G. So, I am 35 years old. I am from Aptos, California. I graduated from Aptos High in 2005. I played high school golf there, and I was a NorCal champ, and I was a state champ.
How did you get into golf? Like,
so I was your consummate jock growing up. I played all the sports: baseball, football, basketball. I played Pop Warner. I was a linebacker. I mean, I'm 5'9", 160.
Wow.
But, you know, I always loved to hit people. And then played baseball for the majority of my life growing up, little league and whatnot. And then just turns out that you know, I played golf one day and just kind of got hooked like the rest of us, you know, fell under the drug of golf and still searching how to get better ever since.
How quickly
did you realize, or people around you realize you were good?
So I remember when I was a kid, when it wasn't far into my journey of starting to play, and there was talk about when I first broke 90, I remember these older guys saying, oh, this little shit they call Eddie, mm-hmm. you know, this kid just shot 90. It's like his 10th time playing golf.
Wow.
So once I heard chatter about that, it kind of invigorated me to kind of want to go play more and get better. And my mom dropped me off and picked me up every night at, dropped me off after school, picked me up at dark every night. And I just grew my game every day. I fell in love with it and fell in love with the process of trying to get better and all the facets that go along with it. And, I was just transfixed by the game, and I still am today. And I think we all are, but I think it was a great place to grow up. I grew up without a father. So I was growing a single mother household, and my mom, my sister, she raised us very well. She's a wonderful woman, and my biggest fan, came to all my golf tournaments. Yeah, so it was great to be around a lot of the older guys of the golf course. They taught me maturity, at a young age, and they demanded respect. I was a young, little punk kid coming in, little cocky kid coming in, trying to take all their money.
Yeah.
So it was just a great upbringing at Aptos Seascape Golf Course.
Aptos Seascape. I think I've been there before, actually.
It's nice. A great little track.
Great track. You guys got to actually come out. We got to have a game in there.
I love Seascape.
What's your best score around there?
I was the course record holder at 62 with a few other guys. And then right before I graduated high school, I shot 59 there.
What's the par?
71. So that was fun. It's nice to, every time I go there, because that's kind of the place I play often when I'm in, when I'm here. It's nice to walk around as the course record holder.
Is everyone there know who you are?
Yeah, I grew up there, so yes, I know a lot of people there.
Uh-huh. So there's no going up there just for a quick half hour. You end up, everyone wants to talk to you.
Oh, a million questions. So usually, like yesterday, I played 9 holes out there with Charlie Parker, a fellow caddy, great guy, Santa Cruz surfer legend. And after the round, instead of going in to have a pint after, that could lead to 2 hours of conversation. Yeah. So I just, I made my way out of there after the round. Right.
Okay. What were the facilities like?
We had a little chipping green in the back behind the 10th hole, and that's where my friends and I got creative, playing up and down contests growing up, throwing the ball in the ivy and the road and just everywhere. I think that's what allowed me to have such a great short game over time, and I believe I'm one of the best chippers alive. So I think
you, me, Butler.
But it's all groomed back there at that back green with my buddies. And the range wasn't much. It still isn't. It's 175 yards to a net. There's a hole behind it. And, if you hit it 250, 60 yards, you hit into this guy's house. Wow. So as a kid, I got to know that guy very well.
I bet. Mm-hmm. I bet. So growing up, did you when you started playing, did you have a swing coach? Or did you kind of self-taught?
I've been self-taught the majority of time. I've never gone to a guy for an extended period of time. There was this guy named Bill Johnson who used to work at San Jose Country Club, who was out at this course in Modesto right now. He was the guy that kind of over time, when I look back at people, really stood out to as one of those guys that's really taught me something. But over time, I've just had buddies, like when I go out, they'll check my alignment. They'll, just mm-hmm. make sure I'm square and everything. As far as going to a full-time coach, no. So I guess I'm pretty much self-taught.
I like that. I like that. I've got to be honest, I think there's far too much tweaking and twerking in the world. And
a lot of people
doing that these days. What age were you when you broke 90 then?
So I started playing, not like, just like picking it up for fun, probably 11 or 12. Then maybe I was hitting junior high, it was when I was kind of coming into my own and getting good. And I think I'd say I broke 90 at 12.
How old were you, Zabo? You're still.
Have you,
still
not have there you yet. Broke 90 yet, Zabo?
No, it's going to come soon, though. I'm still practicing a lot. One of these days is going to happen.
Okay. Did you go from high school to college? Were you scholarship?
Like I said, I won the NorCal championship, which got me into the state. And in
That's Northern California for the non.
Yes. Know. Yeah. Northern California. All the high schools in California, they play this, or the Northern California area, play a championship. And I won that, which got me into the state, which was everyone in the state from Southern California everywhere. And I was paired with Ricky Fowler in that state championship round. And something I'll never forget was his dad, who's Rod. He's a great guy. And I was, you know, I was happy to see Ricky play well this week. I know he didn't get the job done, but he's a fantastic guy. I've seen him since he's, you know, blown up, and he's still the same guy he was, you know, as I remember him. So I'm really happy to see his success over the years. But anyway, his dad was filming us playing, just everyone in the group. And his camera goes dead at like 14, 15. And of course, on 16, I get up there and I make a hole in one.
Oh, darn it.
And I think a birdie 18 to shoot 68 to win state. So that's when I kind of solidify, like, okay, this should help my, you know, college, interest.
Oh, yeah.
Is that sure. So that was on your mind at that time? It's 17 years old, 18 years old. I'm going to go to college.
Were you a senior then?
I was a junior.
Okay.
So that was the first, I mean, I had thought about college up to, you know, prior to that, because I knew I was getting good, but never seriously. And then once I won the NorCal and the state championship, I'm like, okay, all right, now it's time. Because I went down there with my coach and the assistant coach, who knew some people, you know, in the college world, and we made some phone calls on the way back. And I remember I soon thereafter got my first Titleist sponsorship.
Wow.
You know, where they started sending me stuff. Yeah, so, you know, that's when I was like, okay, you know, now I'm a stud. I'm going to go kick some ass out here.
Yeah. What kind of clubs, Billy, do you remember?
I've always been a Titleist guy.
But what do you remember the model?
Oh, 681s, 981s? 90, okay. Remember those?
Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah.
I do, too.
And, like, the 975 driver. K or something.
Oh, the 983K.
Yeah. 983K.
Yeah, that's what yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Still have one of those.
Yeah, these teenagers out there are like, what? What yeah. are you talking yeah. about?
So old what man.
The process of getting recruited for a college, that's coming from your side at the high school, or are you getting contacted? Is your high school getting contacted by colleges, or a bit of both?
A bit of both. Once, you know, I started to have some, you know, get some wins under my belt and, you know, do well in some outside amateur events, they start, the doors start knocking. Mm-hmm. They start looking for you. I mean, you know, once you start winning, it's amazing which, you know, the people you never heard of yeah. come from. So, but it's a good thing though, right? I mean, you want those offers. So, mm-hmm. You know, I knew I was going to go get a scholarship somewhere because I was getting offers. I had to narrow it down. And I was looking at Arizona State, San Diego, Florida. I knew I wanted to go somewhere warm. Mm-hmm. And UNLV was my first.
That was Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, yeah, University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And once that was my first recruiting trip. And once I left, I said, okay, where do I sign? I mean, you know, they have Shadow Creek, Southern yeah. Highlands, private jets. It's and I had been there before. My mom loves Vegas, so
the college was being your college team was being flown around on private jets.
Yeah, nice. So the better we play, the more apt our coach was to contact these boosters, donors of yeah. private jets. Yeah. Say, hey, you know, we just won two tournaments in a row. Can we get the G5 for this week?
Yeah, absolutely.
That is absolutely mind blowing.
Like boosters, baby.
When I think about sports in the UK and at universities, obviously America is very different. It's driven towards business, isn't it? And academia probably comes second. Once you take a step outside Ivy League, the thought of that is unbelievable. It really is.
Pretty crazy.
We couldn't scratch together for a minibus for our sports teams.
It's gotten even better now with all the NIL deals. These guys are able to make money while they're still in college and pay for this stuff.
Do you think that's a good thing, though, for kids at 18, 19, 20, 21 years old to be flying around in private jets?
Good yes. for Eddie. Yes. Eddie seemed to enjoy it.
Once you get on one of those things, it's a good idea for everyone. And our coach was funny, or how he approached it. Oh, well, you know, if we get these private jets, it'll help the kids, you know, give the kids more time to study yeah. when they get home.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's exactly
direct
what
to and from.
What's the agreement you sign when you go to college to play golf?
So for me, I got a scholarship. You sign like what they call a letter of intent, which is, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm committed. I just sign on the dotted line wherever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you get a scholarship and you say, I'm going to commit to, you know, abide by all these rules and don't do this and make sure to do that. So more or less, you're just like, okay, you're signing up to be on the golf team. And, you know, if here's your chance to do it. If you play good, you'll be on. If not, then
you have to attend classes. Are there stipulations about that? Is there an expectation of training, coaching, all that kind of jazz?
Yeah, I learned going to class the hard way. Yeah, once they started doing class checks, I was like, okay, make sure I go. As a college athlete, they're pretty strict with you as far as, you know, our coach demanded, you know, we get a 3.0. You know, it's because he wanted, you know, the better we do academically, the better it reflects on him and, you know, the rest of
it. Is it a 3.0? Is that
any good? It's just based on B average.
Oh, okay.
Well. Yeah, so if you get a B average, you, even though there was times where I got less than a B, you know, he wanted to bump up our GPA.
A B average, a real hard ass, huh?
Yeah, a real hard ass.
For college athletes, that's pretty big.
In Las Vegas, I'm not saying it's the most academically challenging school, so all you had to do is show up and just do a little bit of homework.
How close is that university to the downtown, like the strip. Madness?
Yeah. Well,
the debauchery?
Since I didn't want to pay for my parking pass, I used to just park at the Hard Rock Cafe.
Yeah.
And I acquired points, you know, I played a lot of poker in college.
Of course
so,
you did. Yeah.
You know, I used to park there before class because we had 5:30 workouts 3 times a week, which is not easy in college in Las Vegas. You know, you're getting up at 4:30 3 times a week, being in the gym. Not easy.
Or just not going to bed.
Or just not going to bed. Oh, that was done a few times. But, you know, we had a pretty hard-ass assistant coach. If it didn't matter if you were at 1 hour of sleep, 10 hours of sleep, you were drunk, you were busting your ass in there in the gym. So yeah, I used to go there after workouts and park in the members parking lot for the, you know, the casino and get myself some breakfast and then walk to class, which was about a 10 minute walk. So very close.
Super
very
close.
Yeah. Very close.
Dangerously close.
Dangerously close, yeah.
Zabo couldn't have gone to college here. Keep me away from that. I assure you, I would not be going to UNLV.
How often is the letter of intent looked at? Is it or reviewed?
Oh, never.
Never.
I mean, it's like reading the Apple rules on your phone. That, you know, it's a 30-page deal. It's just, you know what you're getting in the store, dude. Just don't be an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, don't
get caught.
Don't get caught. Don't get caught, essentially.
How many tournaments a year are you playing then as, you know, a college athlete?
Let's see, 4 or 5 in the fall. Probably about 10 a year, 11 a year.
And they are where?
Playing all over. I mean, all over. Played at West Coast, East Coast, Texas. We play one in Virginia, Florida. What's funny is I think in my time there, we only played 2 tournaments in California,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of a bummer because being the Cali kid, being so close,
absolutely,
we didn't play much.
I'm a complete novice. I know nothing about college golf. I've never watched it. People talk about national championship.
It's a big deal in the States.
It's huge. Yeah. I know. How many people in a team? How many?
Roughly 10, 12 people. It's the greatest team, because, I mean, first of all, you know, you're going to a foreign place. College is just fantastic, you know, and then you go to Vegas. It's just cherry on top. But
he's smiling like a Cheshire cat right now, isn't he?
I get it.
You know, when you live in Vegas for 5 years, you'll be. You see a lot that makes you smile.
Did you play all 4 years?
So I redshirted my first year. I kind of injured my knee as a kid, and I kind of used that as an excuse to get in redshirt the first year. But I was awarded that, and then played my remaining 4 years, and was the number one player for the majority of the time I was there.
And then you say 10 players on the team, but any given tournament, 5 players?
So 10, 12 guys on the team and 5 play every single week.
So you played every tournament pretty much. You were eligible.
Yeah. I mean, there was a time where I got busted doing something. I don't know. So I was suspended for a week for whatever, but it was fantastic. And unfortunately, it was for the week of Hawaii. So you asked where we go.
Oh, bummer.
Every year we went to Hawaii twice, which was fantastic. You go to Hawaii for a week, college dime. We're going to Benihana's. I remember we racked up a $900 bill at Benihana's one time. Ooh. And 2 weeks later, our assistant coach comes to us and says, hey, you know, we can't be doing those Benihana dinners anymore. You know, the athletic director's saying, you guys got to cut down on expenses a little bit. It's getting a little ridiculous. And that was no alcohol. Yeah. You know, mind you, we're college kids.
That's
so
impressive. Yeah. Did you guys get to take the private jet to Hawaii? That's a long trip for the private jet.
No. But actually, one of the rituals for UNLV, which coach had for the longest time, was for every first-timer who goes on their first domestic flight, you know, non-private plane.
Has to fly the plane?
He has to fly the plane. You have to sing on the airplane. You have to pick a song, and you have to get on the mic in front of everybody and sing a song.
Jeez.
It was
some pressure.
So my first trip was to Hawaii. So I'm on this, you know, big 747, and there's, whatever, 150 people on it.
What song did you pick?
I sang
Spice Girls.
That was my number two. I was between that and Afternoon Delight. And I chose Afternoon Delight. Nice. I, you know, so I sang that. Probably the most more nervous than I've ever been, more so than going to any first tee I've ever been to.
I can imagine.
But that's quite the experience. But
you see at these tournaments, what then at college level, you play 10 a year, three-day events, four-day events?
Three-day events.
Usually, what's the format?
So usually the majority of them are 18, excuse me, 36 the first day, 18 the second day, fly home after that. So one practice round. Straight into 36 holes, 18 holes, boom, back the next day to class the following day.
Okay, and are you playing stroke play? Are you playing teams?
Or yes.
Individual,
yeah. There was one, maybe one every 2 year, I think I played maybe two match play events in my time there.
Okay.
Down there at Dove Mountain in Tucson, Arizona.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, the majority of them are three-day events.
What were the big names that you remember that you played against?
Ricky Fowler, Webb Simpson, Dustin Johnson, Kevin. You know, the whole Oklahoma State team was, I mean, they had Ricky Fowler, Kevin Tway, Morgan Hoffman.
Michael Szabo.
I think he was on the...
I'm a little older than Eddie. So
he was in the PGA program.
Yeah. Actually, I was at the time. Oddly enough. Yeah. Barely passed my PAT, but yeah.
Okay. Was there anyone you played against at college level that took your breath away and you looked at him and just said, oh, wow, he's got it. Or were you very single-minded that you were kind of the best out there, or a bit of both?
I think there's always something about a good player that stands out. Like, for example, Ricky. Mm-hmm. His putting, I thought I was the best putter alive until I, you know, met Ricky Fowler. I mean, the way he rolls the ball is a sight to see. It just, I can't underestimate how important it is hitting the putt solid. Like, just focusing on hitting the putt solid. Like, people overlook, you know, it's a little stroke. You think I should hit everything solid, but that's one thing he taught me. And, you know, he keeps his head still, tries to hit the putt solid, and, you know, as we've seen over the years, how well he's done on the greens. There was guys like Kevin Chappell who stood out as far as ball striking. Like, I remember he had a 4-iron, and I was like, he hit it high, like 230 in the air, looked like a driver. I was like, I can never hit that shot. But overall, I always thought, I mean, I never thought I couldn't do anything that he could, or he, you know, other guy could. But, you know, some guys did it, what I thought, a little better than me. But I always looked at that like, okay, if he can do that, how can I do that? Or I always looked at them, you know, as a way for me, as a reminder for me to improve that aspect of my game.
And overall, in the 4 or 5 years you were at college, how did your game improve?
I guess one thing I've learned over time is that the only way to improve your game is to keep playing. Play as much as you can. Like I try to tell these younger kids who are coming up and about, you just got to play a lot. I mean, you look at these guys on tour who are vying for their cards. They're playing every week. They're playing 25, 30 weeks a year. Or, I mean, how about the guys on the Korn Ferry Tour? I saw Eric Cole this year, who was having a fantastic year. In one of the off weeks, he went and played a mini tour event, and I think he finished second. So it's like the dude just doesn't take weeks off, because when you're hot, you're hot. You just want to keep playing.
Is it Sun GM? The lad that plays, plays 60 weeks a year.
The Iron Man, yeah.
Yeah, there's only 52 weeks in the calendar. Yeah. He plays 60. Yeah.
He finds extra tournaments.
He literally plays every single week.
It's crazy.
When I think about that, you gotta take some time off. But, you know, when you're hot, you're hot. You just want to keep rolling. Mm-hmm. It's like being on the craps table. you don't want to leave when it's hot.
That's a little UNLV analogy for you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But when you, do you feel like, my point being, you obviously go to college and you have a certain game. Oh, my short game is good. That, did you feel there was any area that really, did you start hitting the ball longer? Was it, were you more accurate? Is there anything at college where they teach you how to play smart?
Yeah, I think one thing you just had to learn. I mean, and I'm still learning. It's just your approach to your game plan for the day as far as tournaments goes, and you know, going through it in your mind and the visualization aspect and being there, just plodding around the course, not trying to do something you know you can't. Like, you know, if you're fighting a shot one day, if you're a fader and you go to the range and you're hitting a draw, hit the damn draw. When you fight it, your day is going to be miserable. When you just go with what you got, this is such a complicated, complex thing that we try to play, and especially at a tournament level. I mean, tournament golf is it's a different beast, and you have to think your way around the course more than you do if you're just playing with your buddies. That's, you know, they obviously, you know, they say it's very mental. Well, yeah, it's very mental, but you have to realize that, you know, you got to plan for this, how you're going to strategize your way around this course. And obviously the wind picks up and things change, but I think I learned there just to, you know, strategy in the game, knowing that, like, I remember, so we used to work out at UNLV with this guy, our trainer, was his name was Keith Clevin, and he recently passed, so, you know, rest in peace, Keith. But he used to train Tiger Woods, and he trained Mike Tyson back in the day, so he was top notch. I mean, UNLV, we had, you know, we had the best of the best stuff, and we had every resource imaginable. You just, it was at your fingertips. You just had to utilize it. So he was great. And I remember, you know, Tiger spoke to us one day, and he goes, "Once I learned to aim away from the pin is when I really got good." Because at a tour level, these courses are so hard and they tuck the pins. I guess one of the important things I learned in college was that you don't have to, you know, hitting greens in regulation is a very underrated stat. I mean, like Rory, we saw he hit a lot of greens, and it's hard to make 20, 25 footers. But, you know, that's an important aspect of this game. You know, it's just hitting a lot of greens, giving yourself a lot of chances. Because, you know, if you're a good putter, you're going to make a couple of those. And, you know, if you don't, then hopefully you shoot 4 or 5 under after making a couple. And it's, you know, not going to make too, it's going to be a pretty stress-free round. So just really understanding that conservative golf can still be aggressive golf.
And what's your most memorable memory from college regarding golf? We got it, obviously.
5 years in Vegas, Big G. My memory is a little bit hazy.
Is there one tournament you remember where it was match play and you were down and you won, or you shot a great number or you won something?
Well, I won 2 events in college, an event in New Mexico, and then I won conference championship. The conference championship probably stood out because it was a big win, and I think I shot like 73 the first round, and I like 65, 64 the next 2 days. So one thing that resonated with me that week was that you're just never out of it. I remember after I won that week, just how proud I was of myself because I didn't let the first round get to me. I was still in it, and you know, that was really big. And so I win the tournament. You know, I'm going back to college, you know, swagging it up, and we go play regionals the next week, and I just lay a complete egg. You know, it's just such golf in a nutshell. Just when you think you got it, it'll kick you in the ass. You always have to keep sharpening your craft because these guys are really good, and just when you think there's no lapses out there. I mean, those guys at the top, they're always pushing. So
keep your tools sharp.
Always.
And keep it humble. So
mottos we live by.
What we'll do, we're going to take a break now. Going to give you a message from our podcast sponsor. And then we'll continue talking to Eddie about turning pro, highlights of being a pro the last couple of years and what the future holds.
Four! Every golfing group has the guy who coordinates the weekly game or the buddy's trip. If you're that guy, you'll be very familiar with the pain and frustration scheduling, managing, and scoring your game. Why not make your life easier by downloading the Big Game Golf app and start saving time and hassle today? Whether you're a caddy wanting to engage more with your golfers, a pro shop wanting to get out of running the weekly game, or you're that guy wanting to streamline the process, Big Game Golf is here to help you. The app has over 30 games, so there is no need to keep playing the same boring games with your mates week in and week out. The app is also fully integrated with the USGA, so every player's handicap will automatically be incorporated, which saves time and, more importantly, sandbagging. Simply choose your game, keep score, and the app will do all the calculations with live scoring, leaderboards, and contest results. Big Game Golf will even text players the final results. Finally, the creators of the app are open to your feedback, so never hesitate to contact them directly with feedback and ideas. So start improving your golf experience today by downloading the app. Big Game Golf.
Four! All right, Eddie, so school's over. You graduate UNLV. You sober up a little bit. It's time to leave the great city of Las Vegas, and I assume you turn pro shortly thereafter your college career?
You know, it was interesting trying to figure out where to go after that, how to raise money, because you need a lot of money to play this game, to, you know, all the entries and to travel around. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I went right home. I went to Seascape.
Wow.
So that summer, I started, I kind of looked at how previous people had done it, and a lot of people in the past sold shares of themselves. Mm-hmm. So I was selling shares.
Very common, yeah.
Yeah, so whatever, 500, 1,000, 2,500, whoever wanted, and I was able to raise enough to kind of get going for the first year.
Hold on a second. This is, apart from Tony Finau, I have never heard of this before.
Oh, very common.
Very common, big deal.
So... how many shares? To explain this. So
basically, so I was selling myself.
Who doesn't?
True. Yeah. I'd raise, say some guy wants to buy him for 1,000 or whatever. Uh-huh. I'm going to give him X percentage. Whatever he gives me, he's getting an X percentage back of everything that I make. And then in perpetuity, there was a little clause in there. If I make the PGA Tour, then you get whatever. But basically, I wasn't going to, had I gotten hot and made millions of dollars, I made sure that for the guy who gave me 5 or 10 grand,
yeah,
that he's not going to get my, a piece of my earnings forever. So I cut it off at a certain point. I mean, if you gave me 5 grand, I'm going to say, at once you 3 or 4x your investment, it's
gotcha.
Thanks for coming.
Smart.
But, so I was able to raise money. It's a very common thing. I mean, one thing I've learned is a lot of people want to help. There's a lot of people out there who really just want to live vicariously through you and want to see you succeed and want to help you. And, I was able to surround myself and around people growing up and who were able to help fund my, first couple of years of professional golf. And one thing great about the golf world is that, we run into the occasional donkey. There's just so many people out there who are just so giving, and they want to give people a chance. So I guess my mom raised me well to where people liked me as a kid, and consequently I raised some money, and boom, all right, I got some money. Here we go. Sign up for some tournaments. Let's go play some pro golf.
So how does that work then? How quickly after you, I'm guessing you graduate from college, May, June.
Yeah, so graduated in May. Missed graduation because we were playing a tournament, which was okay because I don't care about walking. Yeah. But, and then, boom. You just say, I'm done. I'm turning pro. So you sign up for a tournament. You click, in the entry form, you can click, you can check professional or amateur, and I'm pro. So now it's time to play for money.
Do you remember the first tournament you played?
The first tournament I played as a pro was a Monday qualifier in somewhere in Nebraska. And I'll never, ever forget it because I had just shot 59 at Seascape. Mm-hmm. I think it was right soon after I graduated college. So it was kind of cool at the moment. Going into my pro career, I just shot 59. So I had a lot of confidence going in. And then I sign up and I go to Nebraska in June and it's a million degrees. And I'll never forget. At the 12th hole, they had ran out of water.
Oh, no.
And people who've been in Nebraska in the summer know that you need lots of water. So what did we do? We had to go to the local bathroom, or one of the bathrooms they had on the course, and drink the sink water.
Jeez.
Which, mind you, did not taste very good.
Filth.
So I'm thinking, really? This is pro golf? What the hell is this?
What was it Monday qualifying for?
It was like a Corn Ferry event.
Gotcha.
So I basically started off by playing some qualifiers and just entering in some tournaments. I don't remember exactly the ones I played, but just mini tour stuff, like I was mentioning earlier, just playing. I just wanted to play. I had to get some pro rounds under my belt.
Do you remember how much the buy-in would be to
play
for a Monday qualifier?
So today, for a PGA event, there is a pre-qualifier, which is $250. And if you get through the pre-qualifier, if you qualify for the qualifier, then you pay an additional $250. So you're in for $500.
Yeah.
But you have to remember that most of these pre-qualifiers for the PGA Tour are held on Thursday or Friday before. So you're flying in or going Wednesday, Thursday, getting a practice round, playing Friday or Thursday, And if you make it, then you got to stay till Monday. So you got to find a place to play and practice, and you're spending on, you know, all That's the other crazy. Expenses during the week. And then if you don't wake up and shoot 65 on Monday, oh, thanks for coming.
Yeah, there's no paychecks for those Monday qualifiers. Yeah,
it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, how many places are available for a PGA Tour event on a Monday qualifier?
Four places. And for the Korn Ferry, it's six.
How many guys would they have turning up for that?
In the past, they've had, for the Korn Ferry, it's different. They usually have two courses and a full field, 156 guys for six spots. So historically, you look over the numbers, you know, they're only getting lower. But if you're not shooting six under every Monday,
forget no chance.
Better luck next week. Yep. But that's the cool thing about it is, though, you know, you go shoot 78 the next week, Monday qualifier, you tee it up, boom, you got a chance to qualify if you shoot a good number and change your, you know, your whole life. That's what keeps everyone in it, is knowing that they're just 1 week away.
Yeah.
Just 1 week Very away. True. But at the same time, that 1 week could extend a lot further.
Did you travel on your own, or did you take people with you? Or?
Both. As I've gotten older, I prefer to travel alone. But at first, when you're just kind of experiencing it, you want to. It's good to travel with buddies. I mean, I played the Canadian tour for a year. It was I traveled with a buddy up there. Actually, I traveled with JJ Spahn up there for a few tournaments, and I'll never forget JJ. We were playing the first tournament's Vancouver, the second one's Victoria, and he had just missed the cut, and he was like, "Dude, I am broke right now. I don't know if I can play golf anymore." And I think he had just recently won the San Antonio. Was it last year or this year? I don't know.
He's made some money the last few
but
years.
Yeah. That's the thing. There's so many stories like that. I mean, and looking back, you know, that's still something that, like, gives me hope to today, thinking that, you know, it just takes just a couple weeks, months to get hot, and it could change your whole career.
What kind of hotels are you staying in, or are you sleeping in cars? Man. Is it like?
So I learned that it's worth paying a few extra bucks to stay in a nicer place. I mean, staying in shitty hotels is just not good for your back. It's not good for your mind. You don't feel good. So I just started, you know, I'm just going to pay a little bit more for a night of comfort.
Yeah.
To make sure that I feel good the next day.
I was caddying about 6 months ago, maybe a year ago. Everything seems to blur sometimes. And my player points to one of the boys in the group. He says, "Oh yeah, he's been playing mini tours for 30 years. And he said half the time he slept in his van. So I'm guessing you've come across your fair number of those boys.
Yes, I have been that boy a few times, slept in my car before tournaments. It's not fun, but you just do what you do at the time. But yeah, there's actually, looking back, traveling all over the country, I think renting a Sprinter van might have not been a bad call, because, first of all, you know, you have to deal with the airports and the planes and the hotels, and I like to cook. So, but I didn't do that. A few guys did it. You know, you just park at the course, basically, and just on to the next place you go, and you get to, you know, see the country.
I guess in the last 3 years, that's become huge.
Yeah, I think it reduces the expenses. I mean, you know, it's... There's a few guys out there who just, you know, maybe they'll have one sponsor just give them a shit ton of money where they can just go stay in nice hotels every week. But there's other guys who are just like, I'm willing to sleep in my car to try to make this dream happen, because this is what they love. They're passionate about it, and they'll do anything to, you know, to make it happen. And if that means sleeping, you know, in their car or renting a Sprinter van to cut down on the necessary expenses, then they're going to do it.
How many events on Korn Ferry and PGA Tour have you qualified? And what other tours? You said Canadian Tour you've played. Have you had status on any of the American Tours yet?
Yeah, so I played 1 year on the Canadian Tour. I had, like, conditional status. I think I played six events and had a whopping six missed cuts. I remember at the time, I just got a new sponsor, just one guy, and I got my Canadian. He caddied for me, and I got Canadian Tour status, so we were all pumped. And then come the year, I get kind of the driver yips, and for those who play up in Canada, it's very narrow up there. And if you're not hitting your driver straight, you're going to miss every cut like I did. So that was brutal. But I loved Canada. It was great up there. In 2020, after my eighth try, I birdied the last hole at the second stage of Q School to go to final stage. So that was really cool that year. So, and I was traveling with Taylor Montgomery and Harry Hall. mm-hmm. who are some UNLV guys oh, yeah. who are doing quite well.
I
was caddying for a group today, and they know Taylor Montgomery. His dad is
Monty.
Middle management at Shadow Creek. He's a manager.
He's top dog there. He's the OG at Shadow Creek. Shout out to Monty Montgomery, one of the coolest dudes ever.
Okay. Is that his real name, Monty?
Monty, yeah, yeah. And his son's Taylor. And they are the dynamic duo. They've played a few events over the years. And, oh, man, they kick so much ass. They are two of the best hustlers I've ever seen.
There you go. That was literally an hour ago. I had the conversation
on Monty Montgomery?
18th tee at the big course. And one of the players, he said, what are you doing this evening? I said, I'm going straight to do an episode with Zabo and Eddie, blah, blah, blah. And we're just talking about how hard it is to become a pro. And he says, oh, a kid at our club, because they play in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And he said, Monty Montgomery? Taylor Montgomery.
But his dad's from Colorado.
There you go. So that's it. And he mentioned Shadow Creek. I guess I got that wrong. He's the top lad. So now we've got a hookup at Shadow Creek.
Perfect.
Taylor, by the way, shout out to him. Is one of the he's become a great friend over the years. I haven't spoken to him in a little while. You know, he's too busy out there making millions. Yeah. But he is the consummate work your ass off guy. I mean, this kid was born at Shadow Creek, and just he's about 6'2" or 6'3". Big athletic dude. Just for the longest, you know, he played at UNLV, didn't have much success there. And then just, I travel with him quite a bit early in the, you know, playing mini tours and whatnot. We travel. It was so fun to, you know, he's a great kid. But, I mean, that kid has worked his ass off. I mean, he didn't have to, but he's out there every day, 5-10 hours a day on the track, man, putting, chipping. And he, I think right now, is the best putter on planet Earth. I think he's number one in statistics on the PGA Tour. But this dude is something else. And now he's hitting his driver straight, all because he mastered the track, man. Okay. So, you know, for those out there who want to work on your swings, it's probably good to learn the TrackMan well, because that can revolutionize
your 30K line. Yeah, around, I know.
But hopefully your club has one by now.
It's true.
But he's just the greatest example of, you know, he wanted it and he got it. He didn't have much success in college and early pro career, but he got hot and he learned how to control his ball flight, and he's just. Now it's shown.
Is he 100% dedicated then? He's not getting out partying. He's eating right. He's working out.
He's on it. He grew up in Vegas, or he's lived there the majority of his life. He's not a party guy. I mean, he'll go out and, you know, have a couple pops with the boys. I mean, now that he's, you know, he's big dogging.
Yeah.
You know, he likes to spend and gamble and have fun. I mean, that guy has won more money at Shadow Creek in money games than probably
anyone.
It's probably a sickening amount of money that he's won out there.
Because I think I was talking to these boys I was carrying for yesterday, the Aston Villa fans, like myself, biggest team in the world. And we're talking about some of these young guys coming through the youth academy and it gets to their head. And I think a lot of people have talent. And in that last 10%, is that what you would say? Is it the last 10% that gets you over the line, or is it a little more than that? Or
I'd say it's the last 5%. I look at so many guys I've played with over the years, from Ricky to Taylor to JJ Spahn, who I was right there with the whole entire time. I mean, why did their trajectories go one way when mine went the other? Well, they were clearly doing something a little bit better than I was. And, you know, boom. Some, you know, shows that how close I was, but how thin that line can be. Mm-hmm. So it's a very small margin.
Can you pinpoint exactly what that was?
You know, people have asked me that. I don't really know. I think maybe just not hitting the ball in play enough. I struggle with hitting it left for a little while, and as a right-hander trying to make it in professional golf, hitting it left is a recipe for an early exit.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was horrible. I was just too inconsistent, you know. 67, 73, 68, 74. I just too many of those. I mean, I had great stretches, but I think inconsistency led me to, you know, where I am now.
And would you have regrets of the last few years? No.
I mean, we all say, you know, maybe I wish I would have worked harder or whatever. I mean, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I loved it. I love every second of it. I mean, looking back, there, as they say, the highs are high and the lows are low. And the lows are really, really low. When when you're out there and you're bleeding money and you're not playing good and your back hurts and your wrist hurts and you're sitting in the middle seat in an airplane, like you're thinking, what the hell am I doing with myself? But it's just, this has a crazy way of trying to lure us back into knowing that we're just one shot away or one round away from turning it all around.
What kind of ball flight do you have, Zabo?
Inconsistent.
Are you a fader?
Yes, I am, actually.
It's an absolute must, isn't it, for a professional golfer?
I mean, you have to understand how to eliminate one side of the course. And you can't have a two-way miss. Understanding how to eliminate one side of the course. Like, today I was caddying for this kid, and his grip was super strong, and he was hitting everything left. So I just, like, was like, just try to hit a big slice. So just... whenever you're doing something wrong, whenever you're hitting it one way, try to do the exact opposite, because you'll find that it'll level things out a little bit.
How many course records do you have? You said you shot 59 at Seascape.
So 59 at Seascape. I shot a 61 in the final round of the Laramie Open in Laramie, Wyoming.
As a professional?
As a professional. It was a couple years ago, to finish second. I bogeyed the last hole, and I knew...
bogey the last hole to shoot 61.
So yeah,
jeez.
So that and
sloppy.
Is that your low round as a professional?
Oh, we're getting there. We're getting there.
Okay,
give patience, Zabo. I know you want to go home, but be patient.
So in COVID year, this is June 2020. There was a tournament out in Florida. I shot 66 in the final round. I was paired with Chase Koepka. I saw that, and I remember it fired me up. When you're playing good, I think for me, like, you get excited to go out to the course and show everyone, I'm going to show these guys. They're going to see the best for round sure. of their life.
For sure.
And I remember that. I'm like, I'm going to play so good. He's going to go back to his brother and tell him what a round he just saw. And sure enough, I lipped out on the last hole and shot 60.
You had a putt for 59.
I had about a 20-footer for eagle. And I remember I was texting my sponsor at the time, like, hey, a birdie 18, I'm going to shoot 59. You know, I'm not.
Come on, bro. You know what's going to happen when you do that.
No, excuse me, eagle on 18. Yeah. So I hit two great shots. I'm not a superstitious guy. I mean, no. The only superstition I have is the coin's got to be tails side up. Other than that, I'm not one for superstitions, gotcha. But so I shot 60, and I won the tournament by a couple, and it was such a memorable day. It was pretty crazy. I mean, it was one of those rounds where you are literally unconscious. I'm just trying to birdie every hole, and I almost did. And it was cool feeling, and I hope he went back and told his brother what an awesome round he shot. So that's my lowest competitive round is 60, and hopefully crack the 60 mark one day.
Yeah, and you won that tournament. How many professional tournaments have you won?
So I'll tell you another tournament we played. So we were playing in this Tunica, Mississippi, in like 2018. I was traveling with Taylor Montgomery, Kurt Kitayama. These two other brothers and AJ McInerney.
Brothers,
yeah.
Brothers, they true brothers.
Yeah. True brothers. Zane and Van Thomas, great dudes, Vegas boys. So we're out there playing, and Tunica's a little rough place. We're all staying at a casino.
Back to the casino?
Yeah,
it's where he feels at home.
It's a casino somewhere. It's just just south of Memphis, Tunica, Mississippi. It was shortened to 72 holes. But after 54 holes, the third round was played in 30-mile-an-hour winds, and I shot 65. And it was I think to this day it's the best round I've ever played.
Yeah,
I just remember how
probably the average score was probably over par.
Yeah, I think it was like 72. Yeah. But so I won, ended up winning because they called the last. I'm doing the rain dance the last day. Like, you know, I'll gladly play. I was going to play with Taylor, I'll take the win, man. Yeah. So it turns out they canceled it, and I won. Taylor finished second. AJ finished 10th. The two brothers finished top 20. I think Kurt finished 20th or something. So we collectively, you know, took home a big majority of the purse that week. And I remember because we were driving a big van that week because we had a bunch of money. And I was like, hey, boys, you don't need to pay me for the van this week. I got you.
Nice. I got you.
Nice. So, but I'm thinking now with Kurt and and Taylor making millions of dollars. Yeah. I might go try to get back that, you know, 120 bucks.
What's it like having just one sponsor then? How's that relationship?
So, like I said, out of college, you know, raising money from a bunch of guys is cool, but it's better just having one guy because you only have to respond to one guy.
Yeah.
But that one guy is super competitive, and when you when I don't play well, you hear it. You know, it was like, because he was living vicariously through me, and I can feel that he was just as passionate as I was, and he was, you know, he lives in Chicago. I met him actually caddying.
Okay.
It's crazy, you know, caddying, we meet some interesting people, but you also meet some unbelievable people who you friend the rest of your life, and this guy being one of them. I caddied for him one day at Monterey Peninsula years ago, told him my story, and he said, here's my number, let's talk. And then it turned into probably a 6-7 year sponsorship, and now we're still good friends to this day. But yeah, he's a hard ass, and when I'm not playing well, he's not happy, which kept me in line, right?
Interesting.
Anyone thinking about raising money out there to go pro, better to try to just go find one or two guys than 10 or 20.
100%. I might be sponsoring Zabo. He's thinking about doing the tour, the par 3 tour.
Oh, the...
thought you were going to talk like AA or something like that.
Oh, listen, I wouldn't be the right person to sponsor anyone Touché. For that. Trust me.
Touché.
The Peter Hay tour?
Yes, the Hay tour.
How many holes in ones you had?
Ooh. Oh, I've lost track.
Oh, wow.
I had my 8th one last year sometime on the 15th hole at Spyglass.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, it was great. I was playing with a fellow Scottishman, Derek Dunn.
Okay.
Who's one of my favorite people in the world. You Scots are pretty cool dudes.
Thank you.
So he's a member over at Monterey and Cal Club. And his brother was out there from Scotland.
Right.
And so I, you know, hit a 54-degree wedge. I spin it back, you know, for number 8. And he gets up there and for some reason takes my ball out of the hole and pretends to give it to me, only to flick it back over his shoulder in the water.
Oh, no.
And he was laughing. I'm thinking like, ha ha. But like,
Save all my hole-in-one balls.
I got a plaque for all those, bro. I got to put those, you know, those are memories. How the hell did you do that? I couldn't. I was in disbelief, actually.
Derek did this.
No, his brother.
Oh, his brother.
His brother.
Wow. I listen, that
sounds like a Scot.
Derek's cool, yeah.
And you ever go to Scotland, you'll understand. people are, you know.
What is it with throwing the hole-in-one balls in the water, by the way?
It's his way of saying well done. It's a very complicated place, trust me. We're the ones that came up with golf. you know what I mean?
You make the rules.
Why would you ever try and understand that? So how would you, are you like me or are you like Zabo? A hole in one, I think, is in 18 holes. Scorecard in your hand or you're playing a match player. It's a proper 18 holes.
This is leading the witness right here. ask him what he considers a hole in one.
Okay, well, if you're thinking what I'm thinking...
He's already led the witness. It's already a tainted question.
That 8 that I've had probably is about 13 or 14. I don't... there's been times where I'm out there by myself on the course at night, and I make it. I don't consider that a hole-in-one. I consider a hole-in-one playing with your mates or playing in a tournament, playing a proper 9 or 18 holes.
Love this.
Making a hole-in-one by yourself when no one's
around. I agree with that.
Okay, yeah, you can call it a hole in one, or you can, I don't think it is.
What about in a par 3 course?
I'm sorry for all those people who have hole in ones out there on par 3 courses. Well,
you're looking at one right now.
Okay. I chipped in on the first hole at the Hay course from 60 yards. Is that a hole in one, or you know?
Absolutely.
I tell you what, where Zabo's sitting, that'd be a long hole in one.
Moving along,
move it along. So you're still talking to your man?
I still talk to him, and I mean that. Listen, when you know, he was very helpful, and he gave me a lot. He provided me a lot over the years, and allowed me to keep chasing and always push me to keep going and keep going. And oh, hey, you need money for a flight? Oh, I'll pay for your flight out there. So, but hasn't been like that for a few years. And last couple years of playing pro, I was telling Zabo earlier, I was on my own, just self funding, and there's. When you get sponsors, from what I remember, you can get a little complacent because if you know the money's there, it's like, oh, just okay, maybe I don't have to grind this week. I'll play next week. It'll be better. But then once you start self-funding yourself, you realize, okay, I got to make this putt to like pay for my car payment this month, you know? So like, you have no choice. Like, you, the idea of playing bad or thinking negatively doesn't even enter your brain. And if it does, why even play? So there was times where I actually felt I almost played better, and because when it wasn't going well, I had to turn it around. I had to flip that switch. And because the thought of going down that path of thinking negative continuously for the rest of the round was not even an option.
That was my point about the private jet. Is that lead to complacency?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for self-funding. There's more pressure, a good type of pressure, where I have to make this, like you said, for a car payment, for rent payment. Like, if I don't make this, other things have to happen. And it's always good to see you. Like, I was happy to see you, but I was like, man, Eddie's back caddying, and I'm really happy when I see Eddie because I like Eddie. He's a good dude, but I've kept track of where you've been playing, and I knew you won a couple of events and that event in Florida, and it's good to have you back. But what are your plans for the future? Do you want to get back out there and play?
First of all, Mike's like, oh, Eddie's back caddying. He must be missing a bunch of cuts lately.
I tell you what.
True.
You did this to John Jackson last week.
What did I do?
Oh, you said some zinger. It was unbelievable. I was like,
oh. Well, like I said, it's good to see Eddie.
Rub it in. Oh, it was about the hole in one.
I know how talented Eddie is, and I do expect to see Eddie make it on some tour somewhere. I do.
I'm just busting your chops.
I'm hoping Eddie still has the drive to do it. Is this something you still want for your future?
You know what? It'll always be there, I think. And I'll never turn amateur. I'll always play pro. I love playing for money. There's just something about it. And I don't know. Maybe I might have a revelation next month, next year, where I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go play a few tournaments. And a few tournaments, I always told myself, if I don't make the PGA Tour by 30, I'm done playing. I'm going to go do something else. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I'm 30, I'm 31, game's starting to feel good. You know, when you're feeling good, you just keep going. Yeah. So, just as a funny way of, you know, bringing us all back, whether we're pros who are just on the precipice of thinking we got it, or a 20 handicap who planned shitty all day and then birdies the last hole type thing. That's why we love it. Obviously a love-hate relationship, but I think moving forward, actually yesterday I just signed up for the Long Beach Open.
Nice. Awesome.
Which is in a month, which is where last year I played with Michael Block. Oh. First time I played with Michael Block.
We just had his Johnny, caddy on the podcast.
So yeah. First of all, he is grade A, top-notch dude you'll ever meet. I mean, we had the most fun time. And before the tournament starts, we're like on the putting green and someone's talking about gambling. And I'm like, oh, I'm always down to have a little game. So we get on the first hole of the tournament and I just met Michael. I knew who he was. Maybe we crossed paths along the way. But I was like, hey, you want to play a little game? He goes, hell yeah, man. Let's do it. Whatever you want, man. So we played like, I don't know, 10, 10, 20, 20, 20, 40 mm-hmm. or something, whatever. And, you know, I wasn't playing a lot at the time and I haven't been the last year. But so we played, and he was 7 under after 2 rounds, and I was gonna miss the cut by a couple. But the last hole is a par 3, and I was down, I don't know, 140, 150 bucks at the time, whatever it was. And I'm like, all right, dude,
a little low.
I'm already out 1,000 this week. You know what's? Let's go double or nothing. Or as I've learned as a kid, aloha. Uh-huh. You know, I was never afraid to aloha on 18, and I was always willing to accept it. And people out there who don't accept aloha, shame on you.
Absolutely.
I don't care how bad you've played all day. You got, if the guy wants to get a double up, guess what? There's you're playing with house money. You can't lose.
Exactly.
And if you break even, that's all right. You know, maybe you don't feel so bad. But so I was never scared to double down. So I doubled down, and he gets up and he hits like a, you know, it's a 210-yard par 3, tough hole. As the ninth hole, our finishing hole, he hits a shot 10, 15 feet. I'm like, oh, shit, okay. I got this man up here. And I just remember, like, I got into one of those focus modes where I just saw the shot, and I hit a 4-iron about 2 feet.
2 feet, nice.
And he just misses his putt, and I make it. So we split for the 2 days. But great guy, and I was so happy to see his, you know, his how he played in the PGA. And you know, poor guy, out the following days, he had to go play another tour event and was doing interviews and just busy all week.
No chance.
I wish I could have bet on him to not play so well, you know. But just given the fact that, you know, not rooting against him, but just all the obligations that he had to go through.
We talked about that with Johnny.
Impossible.
With Johnny, yeah. Maybe we get some baller that's listening that wants to pay for you to play in a tournament. Zabo can caddy for you.
Oh,
I'll drive the bus.
Well, that's a good question. Are you interested in taking on another sponsor? Do you want to stay self-funded?
Well, you know, with these changes in golf, I might have to reconsider. I'm going to have to start grinding again. I mean, we don't know all the details regarding this new deal, but there's going to be more money in golf, and it's going to attract more people. But, you know, these kids out there, they're big, they're strong. I mean, you saw this U.S. Open, they're 520-yard par fours, and you got to bomb it.
It's crazy.
You know, at the end of the day, you got to make putts, but you got to be able to hit it out there at least 300 and straight. And if not, you can't compete out there.
Not answering the question. I'll answer it for him. Yes, you would. You take free money and no strings attached.
Yes. No, I want to go carry two bags of Spyglass tomorrow, you know?
Brilliant.
Good point.
Well, there's loads more we could talk about, but we've hit our kind of time. So we're gonna have you back on at some point. Really enjoyed this.
This has been great, guys.
Yeah, I'm glad you're enjoying it, and we'll be working with you in the next couple of weeks. I look forward to playing golf, actually. Taking some of your pocket money, I'll take a couple of strokes.
I'll take a bunch.
By the way, the other day, or last week, I'm caddying with Big G, and I'm never shy to ask someone to hit a shot during the round. I think it'll impress them, whatever, but Big G and I get up on 16 at Spyglass, and Big G just takes off his bib and just absolutely stripes one down
the
middle.
Can hit a driver.
I mean, I was very impressed, Big G, by the way. I mean, you stripe that thing. I get up and I duck hook some regular shaft, you know, the guy club he gave me. But Big G, look out for Big G.
Yeah.
We played a match not too long ago. You should ask Big G the outcome.
Actually, you know what?
Big G, what was the outcome?
Big G lost.
Oh.
I did. That was dreadful. Oh. Dreadful, but if he wants to take that as a victory, I want a rematch. Yeah. I want a rematch.
I'll be glad to.
Okay,
oblige.
The three of us are going out to play a rematch.
There we go. Perfect.
I love
play a little 9 point.
Eddie, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Eddie.
Hope you'll be listening, and we'll definitely have you back on very soon. Zabo, as always, thank you for your time.
You guys
thank
are great.
All the listeners out there, as always, if you have any feedback or questions, you can email us podcast@glorifieddonkey.com. Following the social media, that's just look out for Glorified Donker and the Donkey on the old Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. There's 115 previous episodes, so if you're new to this, you can go back and listen to the old catalogue. Most of the content is evergreen. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you for listening. Get out, enjoy your golf, but more importantly, keep it humble.